I always say that being from Boston, I mean, parents come in and they're like, my daughter's having trouble pronouncing R's. And I'm like,
My dad, I can't say her ah's.
yeah,
I'm like, I'm
exactly.
sorry.
Welcome to Accent Accidents. I'm your host, Hannah, and as always, I'm joined by Anna and Evan. If you're new to this podcast, be sure to subscribe or follow us at Accent Accidents. Today, we have a special guest, Genevieve Dodge. Genevieve grew up in Tucson, Arizona. I know that's wrong, and currently lives outside yes. of Boston. She works as a speech and language pathologist with young children. Genevieve loves Mexican food, spaghetti with red sauce, and napping after a workout. She loves her husband and her 80-pound dog, a puppy named Frankie. Okay, you can correct me on the. Anna told me, she's like, "How do you say this word?" And I'm like, "Tuscan," and she's like, "Perfect." Yeah, she knows that it was bad.
Are you in Tucson right now?
No. So I live in Boston. I've been out here for, oh gosh, like a decade almost.
Oh, you're a masshole.
I'm a masshole now. Yeah, I listened to the Boston episode. I'm a masshole.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
But yeah, I grew up in Tucson, so it's pronounced Tucson.
Dude, so I thought that you lived there as well. What? I'm so sorry.
No,
it's like right in front of me and I can't read it. Okay.
That's it's funny. Not phonetic. How would you know? It is a weird pronunciation.
And so how do you say it?
Tucson.
Tucson. Yeah, what? That's annoying.
What does it come from? What's the spelling from?
I have no idea. Yeah, Tuscon. I have no idea.
Tucson. Is it like a native word?
I don't know. And just the fact that we say Tucson, it like doesn't even look
great
anything
question.
Like it.
Yeah.
Is that with the? Oh my god, this is gonna sound so stupid.
Do
is
it.
That with a bird? Is there a bird named after that?
And what?
What?
Like a
something
toucan?
To do with this? Oh, it's a okay.
Toucan?
I got it mixed up. Not that. I was like, isn't there a cereal named after that with a bird?
Oh my god, I'm crying.
Okay. Oh.
Yes, it's named after the bird, the cereal, I think.
Okay. Sorry.
All right, now that we've got
Phoenix clear. North, like Phoenix is spelled Phoenix. Like,
oh yeah. What's up with all the bird cities in Arizona?
Yeah,
exactly.
Toucan, Arizona.
There's Toucan, there's Phoenix. That's so funny. Okay, so we have
80-pound puppy.
Yeah, 80-pound puppy. Mm. Wow.
So. Yes, I have a puppy who's 80 pounds. He really is a puppy. Like, he's not even one.
And what type of dog puppy is it?
Well, he's a mix, but he has great Pyrenees in him. Okay. So he just is, he's a big boy.
He's
but
just...
he has puppy energy, like puppy vibes.
Oh, so easily controllable and non-destructive.
Yes, totally.
I love the name as well. And I love that you love spaghetti with red sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is like one of my favorite meals as well.
I know.
I love it.
And napping after a workout. Oh, yes.
I know. I'm a big nap.
I think it takes a special type of person to nap. I can't
I agree.
Nap. Like,
yeah,
I
can't nap either.
No, it does my
If
head.
I take a nap, I'm like, that's it for me. Like, I can take it. If I take anything longer than a 30-minute nap and like, I'm done for the rest of the day, like, I have no energy.
Yeah, you
I
wake
can take
up
a nap
over.
Anywhere too. Like, I can lay, I used to, in my first job, I used to lay my seat down. Like for lunch.
Wait, are you That's one of those awesome. People that like gets on a plane and as soon as the like engines start, you're like, ugh.
I can, yeah.
Oh, you
I'm
are
so
blessed.
Jealous.
You are blessed.
Thank you so much.
That is a superpower.
It is a
seriously.
Superpower. Okay, so we're going to start with the basics first because I know that you guys, Anna and Evan, are somewhat similar to me, that we don't really know a lot when it comes to speech pathology. So mm-hmm. for you, Genevieve, like, can you just basically define what that is and what
And also what you do, right, and what you're studying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So speech and language pathology is a very wide-ranging field. Speech pathologists work from infants all the way through the lifespan, so with adults or geriatrics too, and we work on quite a lot of things. Usually people, I feel like, specify in something or choose something specific to go into, but we're required to study all different types of disorders that affect communication. So they can be anywhere from like speech sound disorders like articulation, pronunciation, things like that, language problems, understanding language, swallowing and feeding issues, cognitive communication issues, so like problem solving, organizing thoughts, and then like anything that would affect your ability to communicate, like hearing impairment, stuttering, fluency. I work with kids who have autism, so social communication is another thing that we work on. One of my professors explained it in a way that sort of resonated with me. Like, we work on anything that's from the neck up that involves communication or feeding and swallowing in any age group. So
when you say feeding and swallowing, like, that isn't, that's not, is that musculature? Like, isn't that like a doctor? Like,
not my area of expertise, but yes, I took, like, in grad school, I took a feeding and swallowing class. So yeah, like your muscles and
whoa,
yeah,
feeding and swallowing class, that's or strange.
Well, right, and that it's like I guess I didn't even consider the fact that it's like a you're physically training or helping people like that. Like, in my mind, it's totally a mental thing, right? You're like, you're helping how to understand, how to comprehend, and then also just like literally how to move and swallow your. That's that's crazy. That's cool.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
But again, not my area of expertise, so not something that I could like go into specifically. But yeah, I definitely have close friends from grad school who work in hospitals and only work on, you know, supporting people with their diets when they've had like a brain injury or stroke or something, and thickening food so that they're able to swallow it without choking or aspirating. So that's one piece of all the different other pieces of our field.
And your focus is primarily autism with children?
So I work in a public preschool program in a school. So I work in a public school. And being in a school, you sort of have to be like a jack of all trades. And I've just sort of come to love and have been interested in kids with autism. And just so happens, being in a school, I would say probably more than half of my caseload are kids who are on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you someone who could diagnose that or no?
No.
Okay.
So I don't diagnose. Speech pathologists can be on a team of people who diagnose, but I wouldn't diagnose through the school.
But you would recognize, like, I don't even know if you would call, like, it's not a symptom, but you would recognize attributes or something that were maybe relate to autism and maybe, I don't know. But yeah, that's...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I've worked with so many kids through the last 7 years who don't have a diagnosis of autism, but are definitely still, you know, needing the support in order to learn or to communicate.
Gosh, we didn't have anything like that at my school.
No. And I feel like this brings us to like our next question about like common misconceptions. So there's a bunch of like, I definitely did not know the depth of what a speech pathologist could do or get into, but I know like a little bit, but yeah, I totally have these too. So like, here's one that you just help people read.
Yeah,
I know. It's true.
This is like, I mean, this isn't ours. This is just from like the internet, right, Hannah?
Is that what it is? It's just from the internet. But at the same time, if you would ask me like two, three weeks ago what a speech pathologist does, like, I wouldn't know.
And that's definitely a piece of it too. But I know at in our school system, we have reading specialists who really do that, and it's definitely related because, you know, you have to, if a child is learning through reading and they're not comprehending it, that's definitely something that we're helping with. But yeah, that's probably one. I'm sure I can anticipate the other ones you're about to
tell me. What do you think they are?
Oh my gosh. I can't even count the number of times I've been in a bar. And
well, that's a different issue.
Like, you're in grad school for speech with, you're a speech pathologist. Like, am I slurring my words too much? Can you help me? I'm just slurring the words.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
So, like, just with, like, you know, slurring. Yep. And
total barf.
And you're like, great joke.
I mean, my sister had to fix her R's. That's
yes. Yeah. I was going to say, I did have trouble with Oz. Yep.
Well, yeah, you're from Australia.
I always say that being from Boston, I mean, parents come in and they're like, my daughter's having trouble pronouncing R's. And I'm like,
my daughter can't say her R's.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry.
slurring your words and also lisps was the second one that you, that a speech pathologist just is just for people with lisps. That must be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a big one. And believe me, like I can help with a lisp. Like I can get into it. but that's very, very little of what we do. I've probably seen one child who's needed support with a lisp in the school system.
Yeah.
And what's the hard, what's the like most commonly difficult word to say for a child?
Oh my gosh.
Is there one?
So with speech sounds for the age group that I work with, when we look at words, we have different ways of talking about them, but clusters are two consonants put together. So like B and an L and like blend, or even the N and the D, two consonants together, that can be really tricky sometimes for kids that are really young, especially for later developing sounds, like R is a later developing sound, S is, so like clusters that involve like an S and a T or an S and an R.
That makes sense. It's
more difficult.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is?
So we have our speech sound systems, some are just easier to produce. So like typically, like typical development, kids usually produce what we call like bilabials first. So they're like ba and ma, like lip sounds, pa. And then as their repertoire of sounds grows, they can produce more, but there are some that are just more difficult for them to produce.
Gotcha. It's like a human thing, not like an English thing.
Yeah, that's a human interesting. Yeah, right. A human thing.
Yep. And then there's a certain age that we expect a child to be able to produce them. And if they're not producing them by that age, or not putting them, you know, in words or sentences by a certain age, and it's impacting their ability to be understood by others, that's when we would say, you know, support the child or, you know, recommend speech therapy. But if a child isn't producing all the certain sounds by a certain age, it wouldn't necessarily warrant speech therapy. At least in the school system.
Like, what are some common misconceptions you deal with dealing with speech and autism and things of that nature?
I think one of the biggest, one of the most frequent questions I get from parents is, will my child ever talk? And I think a big misconception about language too is that speech is the only way that we produce language. And I like to think of it as speech is just one vessel for language. So we use language in so many different ways. Some kids I work with use pictures, some kids I work with use devices, sign language, body language. We use language in other ways outside of speech. So, you know, while that's a hope for a lot of families, that's not the only way to communicate through speech.
Right.
So that's difficult sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. For someone who doesn't really know a lot about autism, what would you specifically say, like, how are you, like, helping them in terms of speech? Like, what do you typically kind of do in that area?
Well, it's very dependent on the kid. So it's really individualized. That's why, you know, it's called an autism spectrum. Kids, people on the spectrum are all so different and present so differently, and they have different things that they struggle with. So it's really dependent on what that child needs. So a lot of the kids that I'm working with are really working on very basic communication. So they're not able to get their wants and their needs met. So, you know, they're communicating in other ways sometimes. The world is really frustrating for them, I think. So there's like a lot of crying and flopping on the ground to communicate. And sometimes they don't even understand anything you're saying to them. So working on just very, very basic ways to get their needs met, whether that's through sign language or we call it picture passing, pointing to visuals or pictures to get a need met. That's probably one of the most common like objectives yep. that I see. But as kids get older, they can change to more social communication objectives. You know, being able to respond when someone initiates a conversation with you, working on initiating conversations themselves, making conversations more reciprocal, having sort of a back and a forth in conversations, knowing when to stop talking about something and change a subject.
Oh, there's so many cues that you have to like pick up on that. Oh, so patient. You're a patient human being.
That leads me to ask if you've seen the recently I don't know if you guys did, but there's a show on Netflix called Love on the Spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it's about people with autism, adults generally, who some are in relationships and some are not. They're looking, but it's about them more or less going out into the romantic dating life or dating world. And what it really, really highlights, right? Because like going on first dates is just awkward anyway. But somebody with autism or two people with autism, there's a double layer of difficulty, it seems like, in understanding each other. But I really, really am curious what your thoughts on this show. The show is so great. It's like hopeful. It's really cute. It's fun to watch. But like, what do you think of it?
I absolutely loved that show.
Really?
Yes, I binged it. We binge watched it in probably 24 hours.
Wow.
I was so sad when it was done. And you're exactly right. I think Hannah, you mentioned before that there's so many things that we sort of pick up on so almost unconsciously throughout mm-hmm. our life in terms mm-hmm. of social communication, that you know when someone's uninterested in something you're right. talking about yep. to change the subject, how to change the subject, yeah. how to ask them a question about that subject to see if they're interested in that subject you brought yeah. up. Like all of these things that we have learned through our life just unconsciously
yep.
are so difficult for some of these people. But the show also I thought was amazing because it highlighted the fact that one common misconception I think of people on the spectrum is that they don't want to have relationships or they're not right. interested mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. that. And that is so untrue. You know, all of these adults on the show, and I see it in my job too, even with really young kids, they want connection mm-hmm. just the way that you and I want connection. And they're really interested in having a relationship or feeling loved by someone else. It's just about, they struggle with how to go about doing that.
So I wonder how, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, but now that we're in COVID and a lot of, you know, the world is kind of locked down, is this something that like, I would assume it would be, but something that like really affects, you know, people who are on the spectrum? Because you know, they're not able to, like, if they've learned, you know, here's a cue you might look for in someone's body language. Mm-hmm. If they're shifting like this, maybe you should, you know, change the subject or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Is that a big part of it? Because communication isn't, like you just said, it's not just speech or talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mean not being able to see people yeah. as much in person.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or half your face anymore.
Right.
Right. I mean, that would be a really good question, I would say, like, for a parent, too. Mm-hmm. But COVID has flipped our whole field on its head, and now we're providing therapy through screens.
Right.
So I have some friends who work and are doing social groups through Zooms and through Google Hangouts, and they have said that some kids are, it's almost, some kids are more interested.
Interesting.
Not every kid, right. but just our faces. I mean, we can all see each other right now,
yep.
mm-hmm. you know, a little more clearly. And, but I would imagine that, yeah, it's probably a struggle and they're not provided as many opportunities to interact in a way outside of a screen. I'm sure so difficult, but that would be a really interesting thing to talk to a parent about.
Yeah.
Even with masks.
Yeah. And I didn't even think about that. But you've been doing this. Have you been doing your job right now remotely, like over screen with kids?
All through the spring and the beginning of summer. Yeah. Wow. And going back, I had to order clear masks.
Wow. How's that going?
There's people now who are treating kids in person, but we're all ordering like clear plexiglass, so and clear smart. Masks.
Yep. So how has this been going for you, having to do this like over Zoom?
It's tough. Yeah. It's been tough, especially for really young kids that I work with. There's ways we've had to be kind of creative, which has been sort of fun. So there's been ways to kind of pique interest. Like I've been using like GIFs and memes sometimes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Which kids are really interested in. But other kids are just, they're so confused seeing us on the screen. Mm-hmm. And, but I would imagine for older kids, there's probably some pros to it too.
I was thinking like in terms of like how social media has taken over our lives in some aspects, how that would kind of affect communication and autism. And I mean, because a lot of people don't talk as much anymore. I know that I steer clear of any type of phone conversation because I hate a phone conversation. I'd much rather just like text about it. But I wonder how that would affect, like, not so much children, but like, you know, older people who have autism and like trying to communicate with people.
And I don't, because I don't work with that age, I don't know as much about it, but just even hearing you talk about it, all of these things come to mind. And it would be really interesting to talk to, you know, a teenager or someone on the spectrum, if they're able to engage or if they want, are interested in engaging in social media, because there's also all these nuances in that. I mean, like emojis. Right.
So true.
And stuff like, I was just seeing, I keep seeing that there's this one emoji that I've seen a lot of people using recently that's like, it's supposed to be like crying but like happy with like the big black eyes, like this is
yep,
you know, it has like big black eyes, but like to know when and how to use an emoji like that, or what someone means when they're using it,
right? Like especially if you're using it like ironically or
that's like a whole nother thing. That's
it's hard enough to understand.
Right? Well, you guys are always getting on me because you're like, is she in a bad mood? I'm very direct and blunt. And like when I text and Slack, like they're just dying of laughter because I'm just like, I just say how it is. And they're like, is she pissed?
Yeah. I'm just like, just and throw a like, smiley face in there. Like, what's it going to do? Just do it.
I really hate this smiley face.
I know. It's so funny. But we rely on that now. We just like, sometimes I thrive. Like, you literally are like, I need a smiley face in there. Else I think you are upset with me. And you're literally, there's like no emotion attached to it whatsoever.
Right. Pop in an exclamation mark, or I think we're not friends anymore.
Exactly. That's totally. Yes, totally.
Yeah.
And those are so nuanced, right? That's so subtle.
So nuanced. I didn't even think of that. Last episode. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, tell us.
About, or was it your last one about Karen?
Yes, Karen. Yep.
That would actually be such an interesting episode, or a good thing to play for a kid on the spectrum for like a therapy session, because there's so many nuanced.
Karen would love that.
Actually, a lot of your guys' episodes would be great for a therapy session for an older kid.
All of a sudden, they'll just be dropping Australian like words and stuff like that. But I like this.
They're like, they're not very funny. Like, true.
Yeah.
So true.
So I work in a very, they always call it like a very linguistically diverse district. So there's tons of languages spoken. And just thinking about your podcast and being all about accents, a big part of our job is being able to differentiate a difference. So like an accent is just a variation. It's just a difference in the way of producing something versus a disorder.
Yeah, that's so fascinating.
Just because a child comes in and like they might speak Mandarin at home, and if they're omitting certain speech sounds in their repertoire, that would be expected because Mandarin is their home language. So a lot of what we're doing is I'm like Googling all the time, like speech sounds, phonetic inventory of Mandarin, of Creole, because I want to see its impacts on English. And so if a child is learning another language or hearing another language at home, they wouldn't necessarily be, they should be picked up by a speech pathologist.
So many layers.
Oh my gosh. You'd be
so that was just one that came to mind.
Yeah, that's awesome. So interesting.
Would you say Australian is an accent or is it a disorder?
No,
Mandarin is an accent. Australian's a disorder.
All right, let's do that again because I think we should keep this in the episode. Okay, would you say that Australian is an accent or a different language?
Yeah, really.
You're about to find out. I'm going to do a little two-word warm-up, and then I'm going to get into a phrase. So I'm going to give you a word followed by three potential answers, and you have to choose.
Oh, shoot, multiple choice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, basically multiple choice. All right, so the first one is a PAV, a P-A-V. Say it with me, PAV.
PAV.
Okay, PAV. So is a PAV a rich, creamy dessert, a friend, or a policeman?
Definitely a policeman. I was going to say rich creamy dessert, but now I'm like, no, it's a policeman.
Right. Why is it a rich creamy dessert?
All right.
So what's the third option?
So a rich creamy dessert, a friend, or a policeman? A PAV.
I feel like maybe a friend.
Okay. So like a friend, pal? A policeman. Evan, what do you think?
I gotta go with creamy dessert.
Okay. Evan wins.
No!
I thought it was policeman for sure.
And no. Is it any creamy dessert? Or is it no, a specific?
It's specific. So, like a PAV, you would only ever say PAV. Like the full name is Pavlova, but you would never say Pavlova. And it's like basically like it's very controversial. Either you love it or you hate it. I love it because my mum makes it like really, really well. But it's basically a giant meringue. And then it's like sandwiched between cream and fruit. It's like delicious.
Wait, did I see this on the Great British Bake Off or something?
Probably. It's like delicious. It's very sweet, but.
Does it come from somewhere? I mean, Pavlov, that's like, right? That's Australian.
It's so like... got nothing to do with Pavlov. But
wait,
what's it called? Pavlova.
Pavlova? Well, I mean, that's like Russian, right?
Pavlova. Yeah. It's a.
Pavlova.
It's. Oh my God, it's named after the Russian ballerina Anna Pavlova.
Yeah, I know, it's a Russian word.
But,
right?
Yeah, but like still, it's so Australian that I wouldn't even associate it with anything else. But that's like basically it's a meringue dessert with a crisp crust and soft and light on the inside, usually topped with fruit and whipped cream. And it's pronounced just like the dancer, which it was named after. Well,
oh, it was named after them.
Yeah, Anna Pavlova.
But it looks like the dessert is from Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, it's very obvious.
But why did they name it after her?
I have no freaking idea. That's so amazing.
Does it look? Is it because it looks like a tutu and she was really
maybe it does kind of look.
Are Aussies really into like dancers?
Absolutely not.
Whoa, that was a very strong reaction. Okay.
I mean, you wouldn't think
like Australia dancing, like it just doesn't go.
Hate dancing.
Yeah, hate it. Okay, so the next one is the word galah. So what do you think it means? A galah means either don't be a fool, don't act like royalty, or don't be in a hurry. Galah. Galah. You have to really
G-A-L-A?
G-A-L-A-H. Galah.
Galah. Galah.
Galah.
I love how you guys have to say it over and over again.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm trying to imagine, when would Hannah say galah?
Oh, don't be a galah.
Yeah, can
don't...
you use it in a sentence?
No, absolutely not. It would give absolutely. It away.
No way in hell. Okay, say the choices.
Okay, so the choice is either don't be a fool, don't act like royalty, or don't be in a hurry.
Don't be in a hurry.
Okay.
Genevieve?
Yeah?
I mean, don't be a fool? I don't know. Galah sounds a little foolish.
Okay. I think it's going to be don't act like royalty.
All right. So Genevieve is right.
Ah.
It's like a galah. You're being a galah. Don't be a galah. What a galah.
Interesting. I wonder where that
and
word
so
came
it's
from
named
too.
After a pink and gray cockatoo, and it's the most common and widespread type of cockatoo, and it can be found in almost all parts of Australia.
I think it's also a city in Arizona, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. But yeah. Galah. What a galah.
What a galah. That sounds like, yeah, that's just a sound. That's not like a yeah. word.
It's a galah. Okay. All right. So the next one is a phrase.
Okay.
And it is up and down like a bride's nightie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what a hoe.
So, yeah, what do you think that that could mean?
Up and down like a bride's nightie.
And my mom says this. It's like oh, real.
Oh, that's what? A good hint.
Up and down like a bride's nightie.
And Hannah's mom says it.
And yep. Hannah's mom says it. She's got to be a guest. I mean, she's referenced her mom saying and doing so many things that it's like, this would be wild.
Oh, so good.
Okay, my guess, there's no multiple choice, right?
No, there's no multiple choice. It's free range. Go for it.
My guess is it means like wishy-washy. Okay. Like you can't yeah. decide. Like okay. up and down, like a like the bride like can't decide in her 90s.
Okay, okay. I like it. I like it.
Thanks. Thanks. I know it's wrong already.
Up and down like a bride's 90.
Like a bride's 90.
Do you call it a 90?
What are you talking about?
Like a, like a, what you would go, like
sleepwear.
Pajamas. Yeah. But like a 90. Like a dress.
Like a nightgown, like I think is what we like would call it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely know what it is, but if yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to go put on my nightie, like my
right. husband, doesn't that sound so
and you're
much
just up and down and up and down about it.
Maybe like a Southern, I feel like it might be a Southern thing, like, oh, God, you know, like it's,
no, it's
like
an Aussie thing.
But no, I know, but like nightie.
You could see it.
I feel like the Southern, like I could see South. Southern people saying, oh, okay. oh she had a nightie on. And she went to her shiffer robe and got her nightie.
All right. What do you think? What do you think it is?
Maybe like aloof.
Okay.
I'm gonna say that she was like
she
I'm gonna say that it means that you're very eager. I don't know.
Okay, so Evan was kind of right.
Oh. Yeah, that was the best guess.
Yeah, it
was.
So I am like this, Evan, and you know this, that I change my opinion like that. And it's basically, yeah. and that's why my mom would say it to me. She'd be like, you're changing it. You're like a like up and down like a bride's nightie. Like, make up your mind. Like, which is it?
And so that was the clue when she said her mom says this a lot. Yep. She says it to her.
Yeah, all the time. I'm like, I love it. I hate it. I hate it. I love it.
She is. Yeah. Very much
right. Oh my gosh.
So that's
you're like, I hate this thing. And me and Anna are like, give it 24 hours. And yeah. Anna's like, I love it now.
I think it's funny too because it's like you always have such a strong reaction to things. It's
so
like,
strong.
Instagram releases some new thing, and she's like, oh, I hate it. And we're like.
Okay. It's so true. I should just learn to keep my mouth shut and just wait 24 hours.
Hey, you're a bride. You're a bride.
You know? I'm a bride's 90.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, Genevieve, for joining us.
Thank you. You were so fun. I have a question about all of your
sayings.
Multiple
choice?
So, yeah. I don't know.
Exactly.
I was just wondering, just listening to all of your episodes,
yeah.
Do Australians just have a lot of sayings, or am I just biased because we know all the sayings here? Is it just like a thing in Australia?
I honestly don't. Like, I just think that I just thought that everyone else kind of spoke like this. Like, honestly, I knew that it was a little bit weird, but I just assumed, like, how many times would I say stuff at work, Anna and Evan, and just assume that you guys would know it? Like I go
so it's
into
just a
it.
Cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing,
it
but
like.
It's like so like intertwined and just like you grow up with it. You literally would go outside the country and you would just say it and just assume that everyone else would know what you're talking about.
Well, and that's what's so funny is that I think it seems to be with my limited knowledge of Australians, you guys very much have this like weird relationship with language and your words and your you know. Like, oh yeah,
playful with it.
It's very so playful.
It's almost like there were these old euphemisms and then they just stuck around a lot longer. Like, you know, the old euphemism, I gotta see a man about a dog, which means you gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh,
it's like, I feel like
I thought it was the doctor.
Gotta see a man about a dog.
I don't know.
No,
gotta see a doctor about a dog.
But like, it's like that seems like an Australianism. So it seems to me like a lot of these, we should do some research on this because I feel like a lot of them came from. like euphemisms, like old euphemisms.
It's like, it's almost like Australians just like were rebellious in like, I don't want to say this thing normally. I want to say it a different way. And so because they make no sense sometimes.
But they don't. But then you
love on the spectrum is set in Australia.
Yeah.
Right.
And typically sometimes these are things that people on the spectrum struggle with because they're so abstract and there's so many like cultural and societal nuances around them. You have to sort of like listen around the saying to know even what it means.
It's true.
I don't know. Just thinking about all of that.
Yeah, because
in Australia,
like,
people struggle.
Sometimes I'll break it down for you and you'll be like, okay, that makes sense. But most of the time I explain it, you're like, that makes like no sense. There's like no connection whatsoever. It's so funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
I don't know.
Interesting.
But thank you so much for joining us, Genevieve. You've been amazing. And for everyone that's listening, I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure that if you did like this podcast, be sure to subscribe and follow us and follow us on your favorite listening app. And if you do listen on Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a review. I can see more reviews coming up. And up. Like there's some good ones on there. So make sure that you do.
Thank you
so much.
People are listening.
They are listening. And catch us on the next episode.